I do too.
More time to go for the debate and the delegate, but no, I'll get to those.
Nothing?
Okay. Only for debate, for the delegate, your brother.
How about for you?
You really speak more in the Bible. You're reading it all.
Sure, brother. I'm going to pass the rule book here, and those of you that are in Greek class, we did this. I'm just going to have you update the rule book according to the sheet so we can get it transferred in there. That way I won't have to forge your initials in all those spots. It gets rather old after a while. Oh, yeah, I could have. The office said they would have done it after I had already done it, so if I'd have waited a day, then I probably could have had it done.
I'm just going to go and throw myself in on that one day I came in late.
Uh-huh.
Went and got down and came that day.
Yeah, okay. Sure. Get it all squared away there. Okay. Lesson 51 is where we left off, and we were finishing up the discussion of that before we gird up our loins and stick it out into Lesson 52, which is going to bring our object suffixes into being. And 52, I think, will be the last one in that set of four. It would be 49 to 52 for our next quizzes and so forth. And then we'll just have one more after that, one more section, 53 to 55. Well, my marker says we left off verse 14.
Regarding that,
yeah.
When it, we haven't got there yet, of course, but I guess we do cover two lessons of object suffixes.
Yeah.
I wonder if you're going to have a test that involves that.
Well, we start in lesson 52, and then 53 is also additional forms, and 54 is also the ones on the imperfect.
Yeah.
So they're all dealing with object suffixes. I was thinking of then lesson 55 is clause relationships and so forth, conditional sentences, that type of thing. So these next three chapters are going to be.
The grammar test that we have on us is going to be translation or is it going to be grammar?
Well, we'll probably have some grammar on that one just because we're going to have to get. Yeah. I'll give you kind of a detailed, synopsis of what you'll be expected. But I anticipate having some forms on there for identification purposes. But again, it'll be going from Hebrew to English, even on those forms. Except on some of them, I'm not sure. I'll have to look and see what I've got down and think about it a little bit more, but I'll let you know exactly what to expect.
How far off?
Well, let's see. We'll probably be through 51 today. We'll get started into 52. We'll start getting the exercises tomorrow and the next day. So we're probably not looking at a test until the end of next week at the earliest, probably the beginning of the week after. So, yeah, like next week we can handle the vocabulary. We can probably do the vocabulary, say, next Thursday, and then the Thursday following do the grammar. That's probably what it'll work out to be. Yeah. Huh? Or Tuesday. We'll pick a day as you guys like. I don't know what worked out last semester. It seemed like we were doing it on Thursday, but maybe it was Tuesday. Was it Tuesday? I get confused between Greek and Hebrew. I want to try to separate it, so I want to try to keep Greek and Hebrew out of phase. Because some of you guys are in both, and have a little mercy.
Yeah,
right. Since it doesn't matter anymore. Okay, verse 14, I think, is where we left off in lesson 51. So, in the reading. And John, we'll start with you there. These are all fairly short.
Ishbati, lebet eli im yitkaper avon bet eli bezevak to im uvin nechat Minicha.
Okay.
Ad Olam.
Okay, good.
And therefore, I swear to the house of Eli.
Mm-hmm.
If, I don't even know how to say anything, you know, he put it in a not form, but I like it.
Mm-hmm.
As little possible. If the iniquity of the house of Eli shall be covered or expiated or taken away, I suppose
right.
I might say, in a sacrifice,
mm-hmm.
or offering
mm-hmm.
until forever
yeah okay and the reason of course they translated if not or something that this shall not is because of this oath kind of thing, the first part of an oath. So literally you're right, it's if this shall ever happen, in other words, and therefore I have sworn that to the house of Eli, if the iniquity of the house of Eli shall be expiated by sacrifice or by offering forever. And of course that wouldn't make any English sense. So we have to do something with it. But the idea is an oath. In other words, they're saying, woe be to me and more if this shall happen. It's kind of the first part of the oath is left off.
That swear, though, it's in the Hithpael.
Yeah.
Pretty. I mean, it's an oath, and it's in Hithpael, and it's forever.
Yeah, that's right.
That's pretty serious.
Yeah, it sure is. It's got a very good, it's got a lot of impact to it. Okay, so for your translations, I would accept on a test a translation of just if real straightforward literal, so that I can see that you're seeing what's happening. However, if you translate this to somebody else who is not privy to what's going on, you better, you know, do something to it so that they can understand what's going on.
I put if in an ellipse that way to indicate that there's something else there that is unspoken.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to do it. That's a good way to do it. And if you're doing exegesis, you probably want to explain the idiom. Maybe put it down literally and then explain the idiom. That's what I like to do. To make it as accurate as possible as far as exegesis is concerned. Okay. Yes, question. What was that?
I don't understand
it. You can't really.
Oh.
Because, you know, because in the literal sense, it doesn't make any sense, even in Hebrew. Because, you know, because there is an implied initial condition to the oath. God do to me and more, that type of thing, if this shall happen. In other words, it's a strong negative, but because they said the phrase, God be to, you know, do me and more, whatever, this imprecation, whatever it is at the beginning, then they got to do this so frequently and said, oh, so frequently, that they just dropped the first part of it out. That even happens in the New Testament, mm-hmm. in the book of Hebrews. You'll see, you know, they shall not enter into my rest. The Greek says, if they shall enter into my rest, and it's just a translation of the Hebrew, which is the same kind of construction as this, and it really throws people for a loop if they don't know what's happening. It's an oath that's being made, and so they're swearing that it won't happen. So they're saying, you know, may I be cursed if this happens, you know. And so since you don't want to be cursed, of course, you're putting your life on the line, as it were, that this is not going to happen. So that's what God is doing here, is making a proclamation and is swearing by an oath, as it were, that the house of Eli, the iniquity of the house of Eli shall not be expiated by sacrifice or offering forever.
You know, since it's reflective, the Hithpael can be reflective,
mm-hmm.
you could almost say,
are you thinking about sworn by myself, that type of thing?
But the swearing is really...
Yeah.
You'd have to include that into the...
I think where it actually... You know, it may not be stated so much in this word. In other words, you have to check the Hebrew and see if the verb means to swear without being hithpael. And then see if it, in the hithpael usage, it's got this connotation of by myself or something. That's a possibility.
But the swearing is in the nimble. That's
ish. Oh, yes. Yeah. It's the expiation. Yeah, it's the expiation. That's the hithpael form. Okay.
I that probably. In essence, you say, if I will forgive,
mm-hmm.
I will expiate, even though the first person isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it more means they will be expiated for themselves.
Okay.
You don't understand what I mean? Where is the reflective idea involved in there?
I look at it in a different way.
As far as expiation, you're wondering what the idea
yeah.
there is?
Yeah, the reflective idea in this
yeah.
Well, I was just saying my translation is easier. Mm-hmm. Easier to explain.
Okay.
I translated that I was warned that the house of Eli, that the iniquity of the house of Eli will not atone itself, except by
Okay. Not atone itself. That might be the idea, because it's if you translate the way they have, they've given it even a passive sense. Will not be expiated, you know.
Yeah.
So that's really a passive idea, and that's not so much akin to hiphile. It's probably because of the idiom of the did anybody look up the root before it became hiphile?
What?
Here?
To
cover, okay.
To atone.
Yeah. Let's see what they gave you here.
So I was connecting the reflective part back iniquity.
To cover itself.
Yeah, the iniquity will not cover itself.
Yeah.
That's probably the idea. I think you're probably right.
Really?
The iniquity covering itself.
And then you go to the indirect object side and how it would cover itself.
Mm-hmm.
In sacrifice and offering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a sense, you're getting a personification of the iniquity trying to cover itself, and that would be a figure of speech. That's probably the right idea. I can't think of anything else that would fit as well. Okay. Did they give you the hiphile form of that verb in the vocab, or did they just give it to you as...
Because we weren't... That kafar was back.
Okay. They just gave you the foot... Well, yeah, the footnote just says will not be expiated. That's what they're relying on you to do. To just take what they put in the footnote. But we want to go a little bit deeper than that if we can. So I think you probably got the right idea on that. Okay, let's move to verse 15 then, Tony.
Vayishkav Shemuel al Haboker.
Mm-hmm. Ad Haboker. Vayivtach. 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 Okay.
And Jalisbo. Bein Yahweh. Ushemuel. Yare. Yagid. Beth.
Hamar.
Okay.
Okay, I wanted that. Looking at that again, it should be Dalfoth instead of Dalathoth. It's because you have a pathak in the first syllable and it would close it, and you don't have a dagation there or anything. Although you would usually expect a dagish lane in the tau there. That might be a debatable one there. So you would normally expect Dalatoth, then in that case. So maybe it is Dalatoth just from that. So it's a bit ambiguous. So we'll take it either way you say it. All right, go ahead then, translation.
And Samuel. Lay down.
Right. Right, until the morning or until the morning. That's the duration of his laying down. Yes.
to reveal the vision.
Right. Right. Fear to reveal the vision to Eli, or fear revealing the vision to Eli. Okay. Good. Good translation. Samuel lay down until the morning, and he opened the doors of the house of Yahweh. But Samuel feared, feared revealing the vision to Eli. Or feared to reveal the vision to Eli. Okay.
Telling,
revealing. I think they give you both there. This is the hifil form, so I think the cause to. Yeah, is it telling? I mean, did they give telling for the hifil form too, as well as the feel or whatever?
I don't think it has a call form.
Maybe it doesn't have anything. I thought it might have had a feel or something. Okay, but they just gave you the only the hifil form is the only one you've had so far, then, right? Higid. Okay, so telling and revealing would be fine then.
Yes, it does have a call form.
What do they give for the meaning of their call?
I think Haggad.
No, that would be a different one. See, this is from related. This would probably be from Haggad, if there was a call. Probably be from Gid or Gud or something. It's either Hollow or Geminid or something.
Haggad,
one nun. That's probably it. See, that's the trouble. There's lots of possibilities. Or 3A would even.
It doesn't have a call.
Okay. Okay. To tell. All right. Any other questions on this? So Samuel feared to tell. Or feared retelling. It's a participle, actually. The vision to Eli.
Is that the word vision?
Yes. Yeah. The thing seen. Probably a participle from ra'ah, to see. So a vision is something seen. Appearance, yeah, it's probably the same thing. It's cognate to the same idea. But this one looks like it's just a pretty straightforward participle from ra'ah. Okay. Verse 16, then, Eric. Okay.
And Eli called to Samuel. He said, Samuel, my son, and he said, behold, here am I.
Okay. Good. And Eli called Samuel, or called to Samuel, and said, Samuel, my son, and he said, behold, here am I. Here am I, behold me, or something like that. Okay. 17, Price.
Vayomer, Ma, Madavar, Sher, Deber, Eloheka, Al, Na, Saka, Saka, Kade.
Yeah, Saka, Kade.
Nemenu, Nemeni, Ko, Ya, Asher, Saka, Elohim, Ko, Yosef, Din, Saka, King, Nimeni, Devar, Nikal, Hadavar, Asher, Dever, Elohika.
Okay.
Then he said, what is the word that he spoke to you? Not now you hide from me anything. The thing God showed to you. And so may he add, if you hide from me anything from the matter that he said to you.
Okay. He said, what is the word which he spoke to you? And do not hide it from me, probably is the idea. Please do not hide it from me. The Alna. Please do not hide the word from me. Hide from me. There's really no it actually in the Hebrew. It just has to be, do not hide from me, this word. Thus may God do to you and more if you hide from me. Now here's the whole oath being expressed. So thus may God do to you and more if you hide from me. See, the other oaths are kind of picked up from the M on. And so that's here's the complete phrase. Thus may God do to you and more. Okay, I want to check something here. Okay, if you hide from me a word from all the word which he spoke to you. In other words, the idea is if you hide a word from all the word which he spoke to you, and you hide one part of it. So he wants the whole thing. So when repeating again, he said, what is the word which Yahweh, which he spoke to you? Do not hide from me, please. Or please do not hide from me. Thus may God do to you and more if you hide from me a word from all the word which he spoke to you. Okay.
Now that co in there, he gives a place for a particular idiom.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't co often used as a preface? Is thus saith the Lord, co amar Yahweh?
It wouldn't surprise me. I don't recall it right offhand, but it's...
What, is this kind of a particle that...
Yeah. I suppose you'd have to call it a particle. You have a comment there? Okay.
So,
it's an adverbial particle. You know, it could be considered an adverb, I suppose, too, in a way, but it's kind of setting a, you know, it's describing the manner, you know, or describing the verbal action in the sense that, you know, this is what he said, so... and it's almost kind of mixed, like almost with a demonstrative force to it too. He says this.
That or thus, mm-hmm. That's what I added it in here. Was, may God do thus to you and may add thus.
Okay. Yeah. You could do. You just change the word order a little bit. The same idea. May God do thus to you, or thus may God do to you. You know, may God do this to you in this manner to you.
What thus means? It's not as personal as this.
No, it's not quite as demonstrative as this.
But it's not as.
No, it's not as far away as that.
It's in between this and that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's more got the. It's focusing on the manner in which it's done rather than the thing that's done. In other words, he's not going to do this to you or that to you, but he's going to do thus to you. He's going to do it in this manner. He's going to do it in this like manner. And so forth. It seems to have more of the adverbial connotation of
thusly.
Yeah, we will say it that way.
James,
yeah, but you're right. It's almost got that demonstrative idea, but it's not quite demonstrative. It's maybe more of a demonstrative in the sense of manner. It's almost like an adverbial demonstrative, as if you're pointing to the action rather than to the thing, the result of the action or the person who's performing the action. Okay, verse 18. Finish that up, Doug. Okay.
Samuel told him all the words. And he concealed not from him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, in Jehovah,
mm-hmm.
the good in his eyes he will do.
Okay. Right, the good in his eyes he will do, or he will do that which is good in his eyes. Okay, or he does that which is good in his eyes. If you want to take it in a present sense. Okay. It's an imperfect form, so it could either be present, progressive, or future. So either he will do that which is good in his eyes, or he does that which is good in his eyes. Okay, good. And Samuel told him all the words, and did not hide from him, or did not conceal from him. And he said, it is Yahweh. Now the response is, and he said, it is Yahweh. Samuel tells Eli, and Eli says, it is Yahweh. He does that which is good in his eyes. Okay. Could say he is Yahweh, but it's probably, you know, talking more about the source of the thing, and, you know, it's not really a statement of existence. So, Yahweh, who, you know, Yahweh is it, you know. Okay, was there a question, Eric? Eric, did you get it?
I was just thinking that is Yahweh.
Oh, there is Yahweh?
Oh, that is Yahweh.
Oh, that is Yahweh, okay. That is Yahweh. That probably be all right, because you're taking the demonstrative, the form would be the same. It wouldn't be there is Yahweh, though, because there you'd find a predicate, you'd have Yesh or something in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Can I use the last clause again?
Okay, either he does that which is good in his eyes, or he will do that which is good in his eyes. It's an imperfect form, Yahasah, there, so it's a little bit of a decision as to whether you're going to go with a present progressive idea or whether you're going to go with the future. Same sense, though. He will do that which is good in his eyes, or he does that which is good in his eyes.
I don't know.
The good thing.
The good in his eyes.
Yeah.
He will do. Right. I don't know. I guess maybe it's just phraseology, because it really is the direct object, the good in his eyes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is. And it is a little bit unusual here, too, in that your asher is not there. Normally, when you have a purposeful phrase modifying a noun, you need an asher. So that may be, it may look a little strange there, because you're used to seeing the asher. And it may be partly because of the fact that the hatov is maybe softened from the force of a noun, really. It's the good in his eyes, the good, you know, we could say the good thing in his eyes, but that which is good in his eyes, he will do. You also have the fact that he will do that which is good. You don't have your F on your, and that's another thing. This is a little bit unusual as far as the phraseology is concerned. We've already, though, known that there's exceptions to the rules in some of this, you know, and here's a good example of it.
What was that word for except, though?
Yeah, key in, yeah.
Key in
a
mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think what's happening is you're maybe subconsciously picking up on the strangeness of the phraseology, because you're used to S when you have the definite article and so forth. So I can't give you a real good reason why it's not there, except that this is one of those exceptions. Somebody ought to codify all the exceptions and try to find out the reason why there was an exception, perhaps, but I've never seen anybody do it. So probably got enough trouble. Okay.
They probably modified things over the centuries.
Mm-hmm.
So many.
Yeah. This may be, too, more of an idiomatic phrase. It was used a lot, you know, to do the good in his eyes. And that phrase, you know, what's good in your eyes, seems to be a pretty common phrase. So because of that, usually in these... lots of times when you see common phrases, that's where you find exceptions too. Maybe streamlined, trimmed down.
I don't know whether it's from the context or not, but there's maybe because there's a softness to the way it's said, I guess. Have put in the verb last, I guess, which we can see. And it, it's partly context from this, but there's like a note of resignation. They're good in his eyes, people do.
And he's talking, you know, the way he says, it's Yahweh, it sounds like, you know, I recognize this, and I recognize this as part of his, the way he does things, you know, the good in his eyes he will do. And he's got that sense to it, yeah. Eric? You can take it, you're taking it modally, that's what they call it in Hebrew, and that would end up subjunctive in English if you understand it properly, it's not. I don't think it should be construed as that he might do it, because that's what might happen once you get in the realm of possibility and so forth. So you wouldn't want it a real strong subjunctive idea. because of that, because it is, he's really talking about what he will do. But if you're dealing with it more from the idea of that which is customary and so forth, but I don't think it's really trying to assess an uncertainty.
No.
Yeah.
Thinking of allowance.
Right, allowance, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the trouble is trying to get it over into English and get the same expression. So it's really speaking of his habit pattern, as it were, and what he normally does. Okay. That brings us to lesson 52, unless there's any more questions here. With lesson 52, we embark upon the subject of object suffixes, and this is the last thorny element to the Hebrew language. Once you've mastered this, then you won't have any more surprises. Everything's out on the table after we get through these chapters. Yeah, except for all the exceptions. That's the only other thing. But as far as the rules, and I mean, you've been exposed to the hit by L and all the rest and all the derived verbs, and now we've got the last little complicating factor. Yes?
John? I'm just looking at the King James rendering of this verse. And they put it in a justice.
Oh, coordinative?
Let him do what seemeth good.
Okay, that may be what you were sneaking up on, Eric. I don't know, but it could be taken as a cohortative form. It's not an unambiguous cohortative form because you don't have the ending on it. But it is a possibility. Let him do what is good in his eyes. If there's a resignation to his will in this instance, and that could be taken both ways. So I would allow that as a translation as well. Let him do that which is good in his eyes. Because you could take it as a third person. Of course, that wouldn't be coordinative, though it would be justice. And justice, coordinative is first person, justice is third. It's the same idea.
Exactly. So, that whole statement.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Really. Yeah. Okay.
I never wanted to say that. I wanted to do what he wants to do, but I never want to have that attitude.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, lesson 52, the verb with object suffixes. A pronominal direct object may be suffixed directly to a verb rather than to the object marker F. We've already seen F with the suffixes on it. So we've, you know, Othi and so forth. We're familiar with that. Now what we're finding out is that they'll flip the F out and stick the suffix right onto the end of the word, which already has a suffix. So what we're going to have is suffix upon suffix, at least for the perfix. And the first suffix is indicating the subject, and the second suffix is indicating the object. Which means then, you can have in one word, in a complete sentence, subject, verb, and object all in one word. That's pretty efficient. So, you see this example here, ri'ithihu means I saw him. You've got the subject, I, you've got the verb, saw, you've got the direct object, him. Of course, it's only working with pronominal things now. Where it's a pronoun. And that's equivalent to ra'isi otho. You could say ra'isi otho, or you could say ra'isihu, and ra'isihu, shortening the first syllable. And you can see what's happened here. Your comments in the first syllable has shortened down by appropriate tonic reduction because of the adding of another syllable onto the end and change in the stress. So you had ra'isi before, now it becomes ra'ithihu, and the stress has shifted. Ra'ithihu, the stress has shifted down one syllable, and that's going to result in appropriate tonic reduction. Now, maybe I should give you the assignment on this chapter, so you just have it. Because once we get into this, we won't. Did I already? Okay, good. Okay, I think yeah. I remember doing. Yeah. Okay, so you've got that information. So for tomorrow, try to at least. We'll do the first portions of these. We'll try to go over it in class. I don't know how far we'll get with it today, but we'll see. There's really not much to say about it. It's just a lot of memorization. So there's not much theory involved here. It's just a matter of application. Okay. Then the second example going back to this, we've got the haraga, and there's your mapik and the hay there, and that's going to tip you off. We're dealing with a feminine suffix. And that's equivalent to harag otha. He killed her. So we've got harag, that third person masculine singular form with no suffix on it. And then we've got haraga. Notice again, your first syllable is shortened down to shawa, except that it's a guttural, so it has to take the kata fafa. for the one hay verb here. So there's no difference in meaning between the two constructions, though there do appear to be stylistic preferences. So this is the point. You'll see both kinds of constructions, but there's stylistic preferences as far as which way you go. And there may be a little bit more emphasis to putting otho or something out separate, but it's mainly stylistic variation. As with the noun, the major problem is to accommodate the proper form of the suffix to the proper form of the verbal stem. The following table shows the object suffixes as they appear after various types of stems. Okay, we've got it broken down into three classes, A, B, and C here. And the suffixes, as you'll look, are pretty much the same in all those three classes. The basic differences are the vowels before and after, or the stress. And we don't have a full paradigm here. The second person plural is so infrequent that they've been omitted from the table. And they said he'll give you a footnote on that above. But the suffixes themselves, though, should look at least vaguely familiar. They're the similar types of suffixes that we've already put on to prepositions and put on to nouns. And we've got three categories: post-consonantal stressed, post-vocalic unstressed, and post-consonantal unstressed. Now, post-consonantal, what would that mean into your mind? In other words, what does it sound like it means?
Follows
a consonant. In other words, if the word, if the verb form before you put this object suffix on it ends in a consonant, then you put this type of ending on it. If it ends, post-vocalic, of course, would mean that it ends in a vowel. So there's some verb forms that end, you know, like the shirek, you know, ends in a vowel. And so these are the ones that are stuck onto those, and the others will be stuck onto the ones that end in a consonant. And then between the post-consonantal, you have stressed and unstressed. And the stress refers to the suffix, this object suffix itself. Sometimes this object suffix is going to draw the stress, and other times it won't. So your A category is post-consonantal stress, meaning that the suffix is stressed. This suffix is stressed. And you'll see that marked in most of the forms here. Ani, for example, you see the stress. It's a two-syllable suffix, and the first syllable of the two-syllable suffix is stressed. And that, of course, that vowel is going to be stuck onto the last consonant of the verb itself. But the suffix part here, the new syllable that's being generated thereby, is stressed. And then the rest of them don't have a mark on here, just are all stressed anyway. Then the post-vocalic unstressed, similar suffixes, but they're put on after vowels, and that generally solves some problems. You've got a nice vowel, then you just stick those on, and you have less problems with those. Post-consonantal unstressed, again, sticking it onto a consonant, but you're having no stress change. So, as far as the endings themselves are concerned, first person common singular, got ani or just ni. If it's B or C category. The second person masculine singular, eka, with the schwa there, and then if it's post-vocalic, you don't need the schwa to carry it through, you already have the vowel there, so it's just ka. And if it's post-consonantal unstressed, it's ka, and usually you got a closed syllable or something before it. Then second person feminine singular, ache, for your post-consonantal stressed, you've got just a kaf if it's following a vowel, and then a segol kaf, ek, it's post-consonantal unstressed. And your third person masculine singular, you've got some options here. Ahu or just O in the first category. Who or just a wow there. It almost it's like that av or ow sound that we saw before. After a vowel. See, if you've got the vowel, it kind of slides into that, and you almost get you're going to get the consonantal sound of the wow. And then the post-consonantal unstressed, either be a who or a who, one of the two. The third person feminine singular, you've got either comets with then followed by hay with ma peak, or just a hay with comets, or just a comets with hay. So you've got all possible combinations there. But usually you'll recognize any one of those. In other words, you're not really having to. This breakdown is convenient for us, but you know, in reality, you're probably not going to be stopping to think, is this A, B, or C category? And so we're mainly looking for recognition. And these suffixes are quite, you know, similar enough. It's just a matter of vowel points and stress is the only difference between them. So recognition is not going to be that much of a problem, I don't think. First person common plural, anu. We've seen that kind of an ending before, nu and nu. We've got third person masculine plural, am, and just plain mame or am with the comments, with the pathak. And the same with the nun. So on, nun, or just on. So they're similar to what you've seen before. The trick is going to be adding this to another suffix. And the reason these are classified this way is because the other suffixes, the normal verbal suffixes, are going to end either in a consonant or a vowel, so we break it down according to that. And so try to come with some sort of common rules to help us to put these things together. I suppose the worst part of it is that anytime you add another suffix, you're loading down the word even more, which means that other thing's going to have to give. And if it weren't for these vowel point changes, if all the suffixes just could be simply added on, then it'd just be a matter of piecing the word apart and you could see everything. But the fact that that adding something on short and something else down makes it a little bit harder to recognize the stems and so forth. And that's, I suppose, where the biggest problem comes. And they do get rather long and they get hard to pronounce sometimes, too. You get a hip-pile verb with one of these object suffixes on it, you know, you can really get a mouthful. All right. So section 185, we're going to start to deal with these one by one. First, the third person masculine singular form of the verb, which is your dictionary form of the verb. That's the simplest form you could find. And we'll break this down into call, PL, and hifil. And you might ask the question, why aren't there any pual or hofal or hispial forms that we need to worry about here? And I made a mistake earlier. You wouldn't find a hispial with a suffix, but why? Yes. Right. They're intransitive. They don't take a direct object. See, an object suffix, you got to have an object in order to have an object suffix. So it has to be a transitive verb. And so the pu-al forms, the hofal forms, the hispial forms are not going to qualify. I suppose there might be some hispials that were denominative or something like that where you might see something, but I'm not familiar with any that actually take an object suffix. So all we need to worry about as far as the conjugated verbs are concerned is just the call, pl, and hifil. These are the active forms. And transitive ones. Okay, so let's look at the object suffixes on the perfect. Third person masculine singular. If we take the verb shamar and we add these object suffixes on it, we come up with these combinations. We've got shimarani. Notice your first syllable has shortened and your second syllable has gone from the pathak to a kamas. You're from shamar. So you've got the first one shortened, the second one lengthened, in effect. Yeah, that's basically where you've got... No, it's not really Rosh Hashanah here. It's similar to some things that happen in constructs and pause and stuff like that, but I don't know if we can really put our finger on things specific. It's... In some instances there was. I'm trying to think, you know, what exactly the criteria were. Segalites get that kind of a thing. They get a change, and of course they get that pattern Shawa comets from the two Segals. Maybe some connection there. And to keep the syllable, I think it may have something to do with keeping the syllable nice and open and so forth. You know, if you had, for example, look at the second form, shimarka. Yeah. If you had a pathak there, I guess you really don't need to worry about that. That would still close the syllable. They do put a metheg on that, though, to let you know it's not shimarka, because you would think that it was a closed syllable otherwise. Well, just suffice to say there is a lengthening here. There's things in pause. There's lots of things where this happened, and he doesn't even make a note about it here, which is kind of surprising. He does talk about the proprotonic reduction, but he doesn't talk about the lengthening. So you just have to remember that that's what happens. So shimarani, we've got shimaraka. We've got then for he observed you, masculine singular. Shemarech, for he observed you, feminine singular. Now the suffixes, which class of suffixes of the A, B, and C types are going on here? Just read the next first sentence down there, you'll get it. But yeah, it's the column A ones. It's the ones that are drawing the stress. So, and they're following consonants because your stem is ending in a consonant here. So you're adding something to a consonant. So Shemarech, in other words, there's no suffix on the third person masculine singular form. At least we call it that way. It's just the raw root. He observed him. You've got two options. Shemar O or Shemarahu And so you either have the ahu or just the o suffix on that. And that varies too. You'll see it both ways. Shemara, he observed her. Shemarani, he observed us. Shemaram, he observed them. And Shemaran, he observed them. Okay. Now the suffixes used are those given in column A of the preceding table. Because the suffixes are stressed, the propretonic vowel of the verbal stem is reduced to shwa. So that part is quite predictable. I suppose the hardest part is the comet, the patha going to comet. In PL verbs, however, where the propretonic syllable is closed or at least unchangeable, it is the pretonic vowel that is reduced. See, in your PL verbs, because you normally get the dagation, the second element, and you get an automatic closed syllable with the hirik in the first. And so because it's a closed syllable, or in some of them, in the oddball ones, you know, where they couldn't have the dagesh, they had some sort of compensatory lengthening, and so you got an unchangeable long vowel. Either way, you are generally not going to have anything that's going to shorten in the first syllable, and so the tseri in the second syllable shortens down. So bikesh, of course, is what it started out as in the PL form, and bikashani is the form that you get as a result, and the tseri has reduced to shwa. And it'll be vocal because of the doubling there. So bikashani, he sought me. A further difference with PL verbs is the change of tseri to segol before the suffix of the second person masculine singular. So the tseri, if it doesn't shorten to shwa, it's going to change before the second person suffix. It changes to segol. So bikeshka. Of course, you're not going to have... This is probably involving a rule of shwa situation where it would have shortened down to shwa. You'd have gotten two shwa'os in a row. So you would want to do something with it anyway. But what does happen is it doesn't become a chatif vowel or something. It's a segol. So you probably will suspect there's something fishy going to happen, but you may not predict exactly what. So that's with PL forms only. The following list includes all the main types of call, PL, and hipio verbs as they appear before the suffixes. Okay, we've got our basic categories. A call, we start off with just a regular strong call, shamar, and we've looked at that, shamarni and shamaraka, so, and shamarek, etc., and they don't fill the rest of the paradigm out because it'll, basically what you need to know is what happens to the stem. And then azav, it's going to be the same situation, except instead of a shwa in the first syllable, being a one guttural, it gets chatef patak. Other than that, it's the same. Shalach, that's a three guttural, but this kind of a guttural is, a pretty nice guttural. It's for most of the suffixes, it doesn't make much difference. But where you would have had a shwa, for example, in that second person masculine singular suffix, you can't put the shwa on it; it'll become a chatef patak. Now, in some of the regular verb paradigms, you did go ahead and put a shwa on, I remember, for your normal verb endings. But with these types of suffixes, you need to have that some sort of a vowel sound there. The reason they get away with it before is because it was a closed syllable, closed the syllable up, and so you didn't need to worry about it. But here, it's open, and so it's going to have to be marked. Matzah, that's just your... It's in effect, in this regard, going to be just like the ones above it. It's only that last guttural that's going to make any difference. Before, we had to take into account the lengthening of the pathak to comet. But you don't have to worry about that since those forms do that anyway.
I'm surprised that it doesn't quiesce.
Yeah, it doesn't quiesce. Now, that may be worth noting. In other words, if it did quiesce, you'd probably go to the B-type suffixes. Because it would you just have an effective vowel sound on it. You'd probably go to something like that if it did, and draw the syllable, I mean the vocalic sound from the previous syllable. But it apparently doesn't. Bana three hey. This one is a little bit more unusual. In this one, the hey just drops off completely. So you might wonder if bana being a three hey, you would think that you're going to be adding on to a vowel now rather than a consonant. Because of the way three hays act. That hay in the end acts like a vowel type of hay, not a consonant type of hay. So what happens, they just lop the thing off, and you still use these same suffixes because now you're going to have some other consonant before that. So banani and banaka, so forth, on that paradigm. So you just lose a syllable.
If the second one is left and winds up being a vowel for a parallel, and you apply what it is,
Oh, yes, right. Yeah, it would be the same situation there. If the second one was a guttural, then you'd have the same situation there. On the forms that were, it would have been Shawa, you'd have to use a kata. I think it will. It generally does. There's generally no problem that way, because you're still going to add the same suffixes on and so forth. I don't think there'd be any problem in this instance. There'd just be some forms. There'd be different forms where the problems would arise, probably, because you've got the shortening in a different place. But, for example, Bana, you've got now, you've got the Shua over there on the Nun, and you've got one syllable gone, so things are going to get a little shorter. But if you just apply the principles in each instance, I think you'd have no trouble. Yes?
So for the first one, Bana, the first person, then we have Baniti. Baniti means.
Oh yes, yeah, that here it goes coming back. Okay, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Bani Thini, something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bani Thani. Or if it was going to be I built me or something. Yeah, Bani Thani. You still have the Ani. But if it was
because it's Bani.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Bani. Bani Thini.
Yeah, probably would. On those forms. Let me think now. You'd have to go back to your paradigm. Where was the paradigm for Bana? It was way back there. I'd like to look at the whole thing there. Some of those forms are going to have to maybe shift. Okay, it's page 51. Banitha. Okay, Banithi. Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, we haven't gotten to those forms yet. We're only dealing with third-person forms. So,
okay.
In other words, what you're doing there is you're adding our suffixes to a different, to a first-person form to start with. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be covered in the next couple chapters. And that's precisely where you do get these vocalic endings. So all we're worried about here is the third-person masculine singular form. That's the only thing that this discussion applies to so far.
They're all the type A or not?
Right. That's the reason for it's type A, because your third person masculine singular is always going to end in a consonant because there's no suffix on it. And the only complications you run into are like the three hey verbs or something where there's something strange about the root itself, and then that gets lopped off. So this analysis applies only to that. Okay. With some, we've got samani, same thing. It's just same kind of, it looks very, very much, at least in this form, like a three hey. Again, just because you've got one syllable missing. And savav, that pretty much looks like since you keep the repetition of that, savav in the third person masculine singular form is no problem. That's pretty regular in the 3MS. It's in the rest of the paradigm that you have trouble with the geminates. So this looks just like shamar in this respect. And the kanan, same kind of thing. You've got no real problem there, except for the assimilation. Let me see. Yeah, you do lose one nun. That's about the only thing that happens. But when you do, then it's again looking like if you look up at Bana or Sam, it's the same kind of a pattern then. And there's, the slight difference there is you've got a papak instead of a commas in the first syllable. So that's worth watching. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, of course, you don't have any schwa in the first syllable, so you lost a syllable again. But do watch that distinction. You've got a pathak instead of a comet there in the first syllable of that new form. PL, Kadesh, or Bikesh, we've already talked about what happens with those. Yes, Eric? You could think of it that way. The trouble is then if you lose the middle one, you know, you just have to figure out what you're going to do, whether you consider the comets having changed or the comets being gone or what. That's probably the one that you're actually assimilating. But yeah, but the comet starts out on the chait there in the first place.
Yeah.
So it probably wouldn't help you any. Okay, well, that's as far as we'll go today. We'll let you digest that and we'll look at it a little bit more. We're only going to take the 3MS and the 2MS in this chapter. those two verb forms and what the suffixes look like for those. And then in the next chapter, we'll take some of the ones that end with vocalic. In the imperfect, we can treat them all pretty much together because you don't have many suffixes involved in the imperfect. Most of it's prefix, so that's not going to get you any trouble, into any trouble. Okay, you can go ahead and start on that assignment for tomorrow. It's probably going to take us the first half hour to get through this chapter, though.